I feel extremely fortunate to be able to introduce you to Chris Norman, flute player and fiddler violinist David Greenberg. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Great to be here.
Our pleasure.
I'm very excited about your concert tonight, which is at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. Now, both of you have extensive backgrounds in this curious area between traditional music learned by ear and formal music training, classical training, and that's produced some amazing music from both of you on many records we have here. I've rarely had so many recordings in the library from an artist who was visiting, so I thought we would talk about that since that's the focus of your program tonight.
Great, yeah, and it is an amazing little cul-de-sac, you know, musically speaking, and it's a very rich area, so there's lots to talk about there.
Chris, I know you started off with formal music training. You were going on to a professional career, looking like, in classical silver flute playing.
That's right. Well, actually, as we'll discover in this conversation, David and I are kind of, we've had this lifelong kind of, we've been orbiting each other for our entire lives, and our interests are quite a bit the same. We both went to Indiana University, but we hadn't met each other yet. And we were both living in, David was born in Maryland, and he now lives in Nova Scotia. And I was born in Nova Scotia, but I lived in Maryland when my parents moved there. So it could be that when we were, you know, in junior high school or in high school all-state orchestra that we played together, but we didn't meet each other. And then we went off to Indiana University where we didn't meet each other because we missed by a year. And then finally we met up in Toronto a number of years ago, but I had certainly heard about David, and I taught him about myself. I'm not sure if you'd heard about me.
I heard about you, and the reason I met you is because the Baltimore Consort came through.
You must have heard about that group well before meeting Chris.
Yeah, and they came to Toronto, you know, whatever it was, 25 years ago or something like that, or 20-something years ago anyway, and I went to the concert, and then I heard about there was going to be a little party at a local pub, so I crashed the party, brought my fiddle, and we had some tunes.
Something about the way you play, the repertoire you have, sometimes it's music from the paper, but you never seem to feel obligated to stick to it the second time around or the third time around. It's quite improvisatory in a way, and well, that must be an ideal place for a musician to be.
Well, in the sense that all of this, anything that you're creating, especially in performance art of any kind, you know, is so much about being in the moment, you know, as is living at all. You know, really, that's sort of what everybody's after, and, you know, to find happiness and all that. It really is to just be able to enjoy this moment, and especially, as they say, you know, in any kind of performance art. And I think it somehow more directly applies to folk music, and then also I'd say then also to early music, Baroque music, medieval music, that kind of earlier music than the more detailed instructions that you get in the composition of later music, which is more planned out in advance, and then it restricts how much you can be in the moment.
So even with backgrounds in orchestral music playing and or training for an orchestral career type thing, you were looking for something that gave you a little more freedom and expression as a player?
Yeah, in my case, having a family that was from the Maritimes, you know, my mom's family's from Newfoundland, and my dad's family was from Nova Scotia, there was a really deep connection with the music there. My dad was a piano player, and I can remember, you know, before I knew about music, you know, I was sitting at the piano bench, and we were singing songs from Newfoundland, and he never used any music at all. And he was a professional engineer by trade. So, I mean, for me, the idea of being able to just sit down at an instrument and go was something that I just assumed that's what you did. because that's what I had experienced early on. So that was my initial connection with music, and I've since come to see that it was really a great connection. You know, maybe it wasn't profound. You know, my dad wasn't an amazing piano player, but it was a wonderful. It had all the right elements to it, you know, to encourage me and to feel at ease just sitting down and playing and going.
What made you pick up the wooden Irish flute or wooden traditional flute?
Well, I can remember hearing a flute when I was about 8 years old, 7 years old, and I was just absolutely transfixed. It was one of those moments where everything else in the room was like I had tunnel vision. The only thing mentally, and I was so fascinated with such a beautiful sound. I just wanted to go there and explore that and be part of that. So that's something that I still feel to this day. And of course, you know, when I said I wanted to play the flute, they put a metal flute into my hands because that's what's available. And so I played that pretty seriously all through elementary school and into high school. And then it was right before I went to university that I first played a wooden flute, and I just loved the sound of that even more. And it just felt so much less clunky. You know, I could actually pull out my flute here, and we can demonstrate a few things. But you're putting your fingers directly over open holes, which you can slide the pitch much more easily. And there's many fewer keys. There's either six or eight keys as opposed to more than two dozen. So it just feels like you're really connected with this instrument as opposed to having cloppers, you know, clappers that go over the holes. So it was just wonderful. And it didn't take long for me to just abandon. I kind of lost interest in the metal flute.
You may be, I suspect, like many other flute players who get into wooden flutes, maybe have more than one at home, like a collection.
Oh yeah, I've got lots of them. We can talk about that.
Especially because now he makes them.
You've got into making
yes,
flutes?
Yeah, I've been working with Rod Cameron, who's one of the great makers out there today, and he's getting on in years, in his mid-70s now. So I've worked together with him for many years, for 20 years, giving him input on instruments, and just in more recent years, the past 5 years or so, really been getting into making flutes, and I just love it.
Well, David, you're fortunate in that your instrument transfers back and forth pretty easily. I think there's some things you can do to set up your fiddle differently for Baroque as opposed to modern music.
But. And that makes a huge difference in a very similar way to what Chris was saying about the flutes. It's not with the gut strings and the lower tension that the fiddle is under in the Baroque setup. It's similar to the difference between the silver flute and the wooden flute in that the sound itself is a little softer quality, richer in an earthy kind of a sense. It has more stuff in it. So it feels more complex and yummy in a way, you know, than the more piercing, crystal clear sound of a modern violin or a modern flute. So that's kind of nice, but also the sense that Chris was saying, you put your fingers directly on the hole, you're kind of more just directly humanly in contact with, you know, it becomes a part of you. The flute becomes more of a part of you rather than manipulating keys, which then manipulates the flute. You're actually directly, it's part of you. The same way, I'd say, is with the Baroque violin, because it's under less tension. That means that it responds to much less of a manipulation of a touch. Anytime you move while you're playing the Baroque violin, it will change the sound, what comes out. So if you think something happy, or you think something sad, you think something in a certain way, it's going to affect how you move. You might move a little bit more slowly or more vivaciously, and that's going to affect. So how you move, how you think, is going to affect, so again, how it's going to sound. And so you're so much more in touch directly from you to through the instrument to how it sounds.
A pure connection.
Yeah. Lightning fast connection and very subtle connection.
And when you look at pictures and maybe violin playing treatises from way back when, there's a lot of different ways of holding it as well.
The pictures show...
Today people have a rest between the
There's no chin rest, let alone a shoulder rest, of course. There's nothing under the violin. So the violin physically is touching you rather than... you're not touching things that are then attached to the violin. You're touching the violin under and over. And actually showing, all the pictures show the violin being held, the Baroque violin being held in front, just resting on your collarbone rather than off to the side, wedged between, you know, your shoulder and your jaw or your chin. So that just resting on your collarbone more in front of you means that there's it's balanced between your hand and your shoulder. And that means that it's part of you like another shoulder, or you're dancing with it rather, and it's the motion up and down to the side is part of how you play rather than having it sort of fixed in one place.
My goodness, that's so well said. I can't wait to hear something from the recording you brought in today. Let me in this a night.
That's right.
And do you have a suggestion on what might give us a little flute and fiddle together?
Yeah, sure. I would say maybe the very last track could be good.
Okay, let's listen. It starts with something called a marching air, the British Press.
That's right, yeah.
That's David Greenberg and Chris Norman from their new recording, Let Me In This A Night. And the two of them are here in Studio A at WMUK. Their concert is tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And actually, both men will be on stage at 7 o'clock for a pre-session to talk about the concert that follows. More information online at wmich.edu/music. The ticket office is 387-2300. And what was very exciting for me just in the last minute is both musicians pulled out their instruments and were playing along with their own track. And it looks like we're going to have some live music a little bit later here on WMUK, which, boy, I'm thrilled about. And I'm grateful that, you know, it's 10 in the morning and you're willing to pull out your instruments and give it a go.
So, got to warm up sometime, right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to react to the set we just heard. This is one of the most exciting things for me about Nova Scotia's traditional music, that when you put a set together, it builds. It starts with a waltz or something and gradually becomes this frenzy of excitement. My heart rate just goes so high, and I love the organic building of this. And yeah. Well, they come together so
yeah.
Well.
Yeah, it's.
This
I think
is David.
I'm David. I'll be your violin player this morning. the way the Scottish sets work is that usually you start with an air or a march, and then you go through strathspeys and then reels, or you might have jigs sort of on their own, but. Or airs on their own. You know, you can build the medleys different ways, but the fact that the medleys change tune type from one to another creates that kind of building. I don't think, unless you want to do something a little less traditionally, you wouldn't go from a fast tune into a slow tune. I mean, I have, but, you know, I'm a little weird, so a little avant-garde or whatever, you know, experimental. But so that's different from, say, the Irish tradition, which also has medleys, but they'll stick all in one tune type together. Usually, you know, you'll have a two or three or four reels all together, or two or three or four, you know, you might have a few hornpipes, which they play on a, you know, more of a slower paced thing, and then or a few jigs together. But in the Scottish or Cape Breton, Nova Scotia tradition, which the music comes from Scotland in a direct line, so it's like a living tradition of the Highlands of Scotland transposed to Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and lost to Scotland and then revived in Scotland later. You see, so it's kind of, at one point, actually, they had Cape Bretoners teaching, coming back to Scotland, teaching the Scottish people how to step dance in the traditional way and how to, the style of play and so on. Anyway, sorry to get back to the, so you build in the medleys and the Scottish traditional music that way.
And you change tempos and feels within these sets right on the spot. You have to really know what you're talking
about. Those moments of change are probably the most satisfying moments for me. It's the moment, they're the moments that are just filled with possibility and magic. So, and I find that that's also the case so much so in really any small chamber or solo music tradition. So whether it's fiddle music of Cape Breton and Scotland, or whether it's Baroque music, even the, you know, okay, the biggest music might have been out, you know, sort of on the boats for the king, you know, playing with, you know, 20 oboes and 16 bassoons and so on like that. But aside from that, the Baroque music really is meant for a smaller room, a smaller number of players. And that in that way, there's just so many moments, from moment to moment, where there's just so many possibilities and so much magic in the air, rather than a thicker kind of a sound from a big symphony orchestra.
Chris, are you ever sorry that you don't play fiddle coming from Cape Breton? Because, you know, the flutists are a little lonely out there, it seems like. It's a lot more fiddle-oriented.
Yeah, I used to feel that way from time to time, but I'm over it now. Just because one of the great things about playing the flute is that that it can draw on the techniques of not only the fiddle, but also from the pipes as well. I mean, the bagpipes are a very central instrument, not only in Scottish music, but in Irish music as well. But the way that you speak, the way that you articulate, of course, on the fiddle, you know, with the bow on the string, you can translate that perfectly as a flute player, depending on the type of articulation that you're doing. But then if you talk about the pipes, where you're basically, you're unable to tongue, right? You know, like if you think about how you articulate on bagpipes where your mouth is not really involved, you have to lift a finger to make a little chirping sound with these graces in order to articulate.
Right.
But the flute can also lean over and play in a completely different style. So if I, with the Cape Breton music, which is more bow articulation than you would have, say, in Irish music, generally speaking, the flute can lean right over and emulate that. But also if you're playing pipey music, where you want to be very, use your fingers to articulate, you can do that as well. So that's the flute's actually in a really great spot that way. And it has advantages, you know, that that say the pipes don't have, because of course you can play with dynamics louder and softer on the flute.
What kind of set of pipes are you going to play tonight on the concert?
I've got a Scottish small pipes.
Oh, very pretty.
Yeah, they're very nice.
They're not the big Highland pipes at
That's
all.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
They sit in your lap.
Yeah, and you play them with they're hooked up to a bellows, so right. you pump with one arm and squeeze with the other, and with your remaining neurons, you try to play the melody there.
Let's look at the way you put the program together and some of the composers and their stories for tonight's concert. We start off with William McGibbon, who is a new name for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he
sounds
was,
Scottish, though.
Yeah, he's a Scottish composer who was involved, I believe, with the Edinburgh Musical Society in the 1700s. And he did write some music that was maybe in the cracks, but he was more on the Baroque side of things, more on the what do you call it, art music side of things. But in this case, we're starting with actually an unaccompanied minuet that he wrote that to me had just more of a lift, more of a feeling of a tune, of a fiddle tune, than some of the other ones that I'd heard. So I basically nudged it this way and that, and it turns into more of a romping tune rather than a sort of a staid kind of classical sounding minuet.
when I was discussing both of you with a friend, he said, they must be really good scholars. And I said, I don't know, because you need a lot of time to be playing. And I don't know how much researching time they would have.
We're into it. We're definitely into it.
So how do you find out about these forgotten composers?
Well, it's a mixture of hands-on delving into it and playing it. Because I think, it's one thing to do academic research when you read about something, but it's another to actually take that music and have to bring it to life. Not only bring it to life to play it. I mean, okay, you could be a scholar that says, okay, well, I'm going to pick up my concertina and play this music by John Reed or whatever. But then to have to arrange it, you know, with a colleague, and to take it out and play it for people and make sure that it works, right? Make sure that it's music that speaks to people. That's a whole different bailiwick rather than just researching. And I think for me, and I'm sure David would agree here, one of the things that is so special about this music is that a lot of it comes from the early 18th century in Scotland, which was the Scottish Enlightenment. And you were talking about like the magic of this music, where you've got this sort of confluence of influences from the classical and also from the folk. Well, if you want to get a little more specific about that, not to get too grandiose about it, but really, what was in the air at that time, this whole Scottish Enlightenment, was an appreciation of the classical ideals, and specifically where the rubber meets the road with music, is that there was a real appreciation for music being a tool to express every possible human emotion. And there was also a sort of rediscovery, an appreciation of rhetoric. So in other words, what this means for a performer, this all sounds lofty and interesting, but what that means for us as performers is, okay, so we're interested in expressing human emotions and we're interested in rhetoric. What that means is that you're going to be doing something very clearly. You're going to have an idea of expressing yourself very clearly and very directly. So kind of at least as a performer, a lot of extra stuff that you learn just becomes extraneous. You know, you just want to know exactly what you're saying, and you want to express it as cleanly and as simply as possible.
Yeah.
And that's an element that you find in folk music that survives to this day. And I think we can take that idea all the way back to the Enlightenment. For instance, you know, if you go to a classical concert and, you know, you hear, whether it's a singer or a violinist or a flute player, I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but you'll hear kind of a very hyper-stylized way of speaking on the instrument. You'll hear vibrato, like on the flute, for instance. You might hear a flute player play, you know, and there's a lot, it's a very sort of, you know, let's make the clearest possible sound, and, you know, a very sweet vibrato, you know, and that's kind of a very standard way to play. Whereas if you go to if you listen to bluegrass or you go down to the local session, you know, you'll hear somebody pick up the flute and go, they'll just blow very directly. And I'm not saying one is right and the other is wrong, but there is, you could say that in classical, there's a much more, you know, stylized way of playing. And with traditional music, it's just kind of like something more simple and direct. And I personally think you can take that all the way back to the ideals of classical ideals that showed up in the 18th century Enlightenment.
And for me, I think you can take that directness and expression of human emotion to mean that this music especially is very much like a language. And I don't consider myself a scholar at all. My wife, Kate Dunlay, is the scholar of our family, and I think Chris is more of a scholar than I am. What I can do is that I am fluent in a couple of musical languages. I am fluent in the Baroque musical language, on the violin, obviously, and I'm fluent in the Cape Breton Scottish / 18th century Scottish musical language. And for many, many years, those were two languages that I was immersing myself in, and I did not consider for a moment that I could possibly mix them, because they were two different ways of expressing myself, and I was learning how to express myself fluently so that I could think and dream in those languages. So once I became fluent in them, and I could think in each of those languages, I could move in those languages, and of course I could, you know, therefore play and express ideas almost second nature in those languages, then I could start to mix them, and then I started understanding more about what this 18th century crossover stuff was about. And so I think I can, where I think my strength is that I can take, you know, somebody will say, oh yeah, look up this McGibbon guy, and I'll look up this, oh look, he was, you know, 1770s Edinburgh, and, you know, he wrote these kind of things, and I can take this music and from the page, and I say, oh, that feels like it should be played, this part sounds more Baroque, and I'll play it more Baroque, this part sounds a little bit more folky, and then see where it can be nudged one way or another, and then to me, I can feel like I can express it directly, whatever emotions occur to me in that moment that I'm playing, through the music to people, and it's a satisfying thing all around.
So being so well-versed in both traditions, the music tells you, just by looking, by starting to play it, it tells you what it is because of
yes, and it's so second nature, and
it's quite subtle.
And the idea of it being fluent is the idea of, say, poetry. If you're reading poetry in a language that you know but you're not fluent in, you're not going to really feel it and be able to express it in the moment. You're going to have a sort of a rote way of that you practiced and you're doing it. But in this way, when you're fluent, what I mean by fluent is that you can really adjust on the spur of the moment in that language and express something that maybe is a little different than the last time you played it.
Yes, but what if you got in a time machine and went back 200 years and they were playing it totally differently?
And they probably were. But I guess I can only speak from the here and now.
Right. You're like, well, there's going to be a David Greenberg style in a couple hundred years and it's going to be great. Well, I would encourage you now to pick up your instruments and play us a little something if it occurs to you. And I'd like to remind our listeners that they are live tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital at Western Michigan University. Tickets available through the Miller Auditorium box office at 387-2300 and more online at wmich.edu/music. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
No, how are we feeling out there in Kalamazoo? Do we want to be soothed, or do we want to rev things up a bit?
I say rev things up.
Rev things up. All right. Should we do the maybe the new Strathspey and into some reels?
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm not a musical engineer, so.
Oh yeah, well just make some music and trust that it'll come across there.
Don't break the radio station.
Okay, so this David was talking about Strathspeys and reels, and we're going to play some old ones for you now that are in the Cape Breton repertoire that go all the way back to 18th
century
Scotland.
He said new to you, but these go way back.
Right, exactly.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's how it's done on Cape Breton. And if you need something to lift your winter blues, come tonight to the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University, featuring Chris Norman on flutes, bagpipes, voice, keyboard, and David Greenberg on Baroque violin, octafiddle, and keyboard. The program is Fair and Lucky. Wow, what a great set of tunes. Strathbays, reels.
Sorry, you won't get that tonight.
Yeah, that's not on the program.
Hey, it's a special. Just yeah, we'll call it the WMUK set.
Yeah, exactly.
For today, anyway. God, that's so infectious. Thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's amazing. You don't need no guitar. You don't need no drummer.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, we're just a duo, but we're a little different in that we're a duo of two melody instruments. So what makes that special for us is that it forces you into a conversation.
Well, actually, you know, well, you say melody instruments, but then when you get into that beatboxing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I thought I was going to say you have to be your own backers as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're in charge of that rhythm.
Yeah.
You can't just hang it on somebody else's.
Yeah, and the whole idea of backup flute, they don't teach you that at in college, you know.
No.
But that would be a great course, wouldn't it?
Yeah, very new. I think you're just the guy to teach
today,
it.
Today, 1 o'clock, recital hall.
That's right.
Anything else about the program? That was Cape Breton, but I know there's some refined classical music. There's Telemann, and
yeah, well, I mean, there's lots of great ideas. I think in the program, you know, and our challenge is to pull them off. But at least for me, one of the inspiring things about this music, and again, sort of touching base with this idea of the Enlightenment, is the fact that a lot of the musicians back then were not specialists. They had to wear a lot of different hats. You know, you look at some of the composers on there, John Reed or James Oswald. You know, John Reed was a professional soldier, but he also published, you know, volumes of flute sonatas. And when he wasn't doing that, you know, he was investing in, he was a real estate speculator and investor, but he also sang Gaelic songs to his soldiers, and that's the kind of the spirit that we like to perform in. So it's hard to be perfect. You know, we're in an age now of hyper specialization. You know, like you'll specialize in playing one. You know, there's such an expectation of perfection, you know, in performance. And I think one of the things that we try to, I mean, we try to play as perfectly as possible, but you know, when you're trying to incorporate a lot of these ideas, it's more important to just have the right spirit,
yeah.
You know, and trust that's going to come across. You know, maybe I'm not the greatest piano player. Okay, I know I'm not the greatest anything, but the hope with this program is that we're just going to bombard you with ideas and with a quality of conversation that will make the whole idea of perfection irrelevant.
Right, perfection, yeah. So what?
Yeah, perfection's kind of boring.
Overrated.
Yeah.
Well, and taking a risk too, having that little edge of, you know, I'm not sure what's going to come out when I do this necessarily, is also the somewhat addictive, I would think.
Yes.
You don't want to over-rehearse.
Yeah, I mean, something that's played perfectly is very impressive to me, but it might not move me as a human being as much as something that's played maybe more imperfectly, but with that sense of risk, with that sense of emotion as the dominant reason of being.
Well, with our final few minutes here, I would like to hear more about what else is going on with each of you and where we can keep in touch with you and how we can find this new recording, how listeners can find Let Me In This A Night, the Chris Norman and David Greenberg duo.
Well, I think one of the other exciting areas that David and I collaborate in is teaching. And we tend to do that we're both involved in a festival, Boxwood, which takes place in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, during the last full week of Nova Scotia. And we also do an edition
July.
Of it.
Full last week full week of Nova Scotia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
What month
was
that?
It was a snowy
be?
Drive last night. Last full week of July in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. And, you know, we take a lot of these ideas of immersing yourself not only in traditional music but in early music as well, and just kind of going exploring for a week. So
dancing and singing and eating really good food and being in a beautiful picture postcard town.
You can find all about that at boxwood.org. So it's a wonderful festival that's been going on for 18 years now, and we do an edition of it in Nova Scotia, and also one in New Zealand, and one in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Oh, tough life! Oh
yeah,
my,
exactly. And as I say, I'm making flutes these days, which is fun and very stimulating and challenging.
I've heard that flute dust can be kind of dangerous for one's lungs.
Yeah, it's good to have a vacuum, yeah, and a filter.
Gas mask.
Yeah.
I continue also to collaborate with a few other special musicians in my life, and including Red Priest, the musical, the Baroque Quartet of England. They're North American violin player. And actually, we're going to be coming through Chicago in early March. So
great.
That's not too far away.
You'll have to put a few Irish tunes on that program.
We usually do when I'm involved, actually. Yeah. Somehow a couple of tunes get in there. Sneak in. We have a dear colleague in Glasgow, Scotland, named David McGuinness that we work with. I'll be working with him on a project coming up again. And the other, Susie LeBlanc, is another one that I work with somewhat frequently in Nova Scotia, beautiful Baroque singer.
Yeah.
So I have a few other sort of colleagues in addition to Chris, but more and more I'm drawn back to Mr. Chris Norman here because we just have a great time together.
So boxwood.org for the festival and more about the CD with Chris. And David, do you also have a website?
I have a website. It's not, yeah, you can at least contact me through there. It's just davidgreenberg.ca for Canada.
.ca. Mm. Well, thank you both so very, very, very much. And I hope this has served as a little warm-up for tonight's concert.
Definitely, yeah. We'll look forward to it tonight.
And I'll be there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.